So we are in Mark 15. In 14, we had the Last Supper and Jesus' betrayal, Peter's denial, and a thumbnail sketch of the mock trial with the Sanhedrin and the priest. Now we are getting into something else. This is where he actually goes on trial with Pilate and what goes on here, and then his crucifixion and then his burial. That's where we are at tonight. Somebody want to read verse 1.
And straightway in the morning, the chief priests held a consultation with the elders and scribes and the whole council, and bound Jesus and carried him away and delivered him to Pilate.
All right, so the priests had their verdict. They accused him of blasphemy, and they found somebody to finally say so. But they wanted Jesus to be condemned by Rome. Jewish capital punishment is only stoning. I say that like it's not much. But anyway, it was only stoning. They needed more. They wanted more. So the only crime they could present to Rome was to claim that Jesus was an insurrectionist and he was trying to undermine Roman authority. So Pilate begins to question Jesus. Somebody read 2-5.
Then Pilate asked him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" He answered and said to him, "It is as you say." And the chief priests accused him of many things, but he answered nothing. Then Pilate asked him again, saying, "Do you answer nothing? See how many things they have testified against you." But Jesus still answered nothing, so that Pilate marveled.
All right, so Pilate doesn't really know what to think of everything so far. He knows there's something going on. He's not quite sure what. Notice what Jesus said. He said, "Are you the king of the Jews?" And Jesus said, "Well, you said it." So, but he was still kind of just being silent. He continued to be silent. The Roman leaders, Pilate included, were not particularly fond of Jews. They didn't really like the Jews. They were usually stood pretty hard against them. Pilate was not interested in giving these Jewish priests what they wanted. So they really just going to have to come up with something to make it worth his while. Not money-wise, but there had to be some pretty strong evidence somewhere. But Pilate did understand that they were not looking for justice. They were looking for revenge. And he didn't want to be used as the mode of revenge on Jesus. So, Pilate questioned Jesus. Like I said, he knew he was being set up. Pilate could sense his innocence just by talking to him real quick, and it aggravated him that he was being in this whole mess now. We don't get it here in Mark, but what happened is he actually sent Jesus to Herod. And because it's a Jewish thing, let Herod take care of it. And Herod, he's the one who only wanted to see a magic trick. I mean, Jesus didn't give him a magic trick. He sent him back to Pilate. So Pilate got him back. So let's go 6-8.
Now at that feast he released unto them one prisoner, whomsoever they desired. And there was one named Barabbas, which lay bound with them that had made insurrection with him, who had committed murder in the insurrection, and in the multitude crying aloud began to desire him to do as he had ever done unto them.
All right, so Pilate, thinking he sees another opportunity to dispose of this Jesus problem and this whole fiasco, he asked the crowd if they still want a prisoner released. And they said, yes, keep up that tradition. And what the tradition was is Rome would release one prisoner every year at Passover just to honor the Passover thing. So it was part of something they did just to accommodate the Jews. So Pilate said, all right, great. They want a prisoner. They want us to release one. Yes.
Pilate also thought that this was like a shoe-in type thing, because Barabbas, to his thinking, had rebelled against Rome, so he was the serious criminal.
Right. Yep, he would have been. We'll talk about that in a minute, but actually, we'll do it now. He was a notorious thief and murderer. Mm-hmm. Nobody liked him. He was a scourge of society. So Pilate, you're right. He's thinking he's found his easy way out. So somebody read 9 through 11.
But Pilate answered him, saying, "Will ye that I release unto you the King of the Jews?" For he knew that the chief priests had delivered him for envy. But the chief priests moved the people that he should rather release Barabbas unto them.
So, that's it. So, Pilate, he's pretty shocked. But the priests had done their homework. They had already been working the crowd, saying, when it's time to get a prisoner free, take the bad guy. Leave Jesus up there. So, Pilate, questions again. Let's go with 12 and 13.
And Pilate answered and said unto them again, "Will ye then that I shall do with unto him whom ye call the King of the Jews?" And they cried out again, "Crucify him." Then Pilate said,
"You're on a roll, man. I got to slow you down."
In honor of this lady.
That's right. Just keep going. All right. So, have you ever heard that courtroom advice, don't ask a question unless you know the answer? Pilate, maybe you should have heeded some advice like that here. He did not know this was going to be the answer. Now it's even worse. He's shocked that they take Barabbas, but now he just asks him, "So what do I do with Jesus? And if you're not going to take him, what am I supposed to do with him?" He got an answer, crucify him. The priest had worked that crowd pretty hard, and I bet they had spread a whole bunch of lies about Jesus. I mean, people knew Jesus. They knew that he healed people. They knew that he cast out demons. But somehow they convinced an entire crowd to have him crucified. Those guys were hard at it. 14 and 15.
Then Pilate said unto them, "Why, what evil hath he done?" And they cried out the more exceedingly, "Crucify him." And so Pilate, willing to content the people, released Barabbas unto them and delivered Jesus when he had scourged him to be crucified.
All right, so there's more happened here. Like I say, Mark is giving a sketch. He's not really giving us everything. So Pilate sent Jesus to be whipped, to be beaten. Cat of nine tails. And they had pieces of bone and all kinds of stuff tied to the end of them, so they ripped flesh out every time they touched you. One thing, it was common for somebody being crucified to be scourged first, but they did limit the number of whips, the number of beatings, the number of times they could strike you, because it would kill people. And they didn't want somebody who was supposed to be crucified dying. You know, it's like you'll hear a guy's on death row and they'll do everything they can to save his life, saying, "Walk him to the electric chair." I mean, could have just let him die and not do that, but you got to have justice. So they do this. But what happened is after he was whipped, Pilate brings him back out. And he's kind of hoping that the people will be content with the fact Jesus has been beaten pretty bad. They're not. They still want him to be crucified. So it didn't quench their thirst for violence. So he has no choice now. He releases him to be crucified. So let's go with 16 through 20.
Then the soldiers led him away into the hall called Praetorium. And they called together the whole garrison. And they clothed him with purple, and they twisted a crown of thorns, put it on his head, and began to salute him, "Hail, the King of the Jews." Then they struck him on the head with a reed and spat on him, and bowing the knee, they worshipped him. When they had mocked him, they took the purple off him and put his own clothes on him and led him out to crucify him.
All right, so even the Roman soldiers wanted in on this fun somehow. They clothed him in purple, and we all know that's the royal color. Then they made him a crown of thorns. Have you ever seen a replica of that crown of thorns? Those thorns are about an inch and a half long off the vine they used to make this. They're pretty pretty powerful things. And then they actually pounded that into his skull. They drove it onto his head to make sure it stuck. They even spit on him. Jesus said nothing, and Jesus did nothing. So, if somebody wants to read 21, we'll go along.
And they compelled one, Simon of Cyrene, who passed by, coming out of the country, the father of Alexander and Rufus, to bear his cross.
All right, so this shows the humanity of Jesus. He felt the pain. He felt each sting of the whip. He felt each slap. He felt the spit when they spit on him. He even felt each strike as they were driving that crown of thorns on him. He was too weak to carry his cross the whole way. That was human side. I mean, that's pretty powerful. You go through everything he's going through and be able to carry it all. So he carried it part way. They get Simon. Alexander and Rufus are his children, and they believe that they were early leaders in the church, and that's why they are mentioned, because people would have known who they were. Otherwise, you wouldn't mention their names if they weren't somebody. But if you think about it, that's the Son of God who's suffering all this pain and humiliation. He could have called down 10,000 angels to help him get the cross up there, or he could have called down fire and destroyed every enemy he had right there in the crowd. That would have been pretty impressive either way. But he didn't. He was on a path to suffer this because he had to pay the penalty for our sin. All right, 22 and 23.
And they bring him to the place Golgotha, which is being interpreted the place of the skull. And they gave him to drink wine mingled with myrrh, but he received it not.
All right, they actually don't know where Golgotha is. There is nothing around that resembles a skull. So, but it might not even do that. It could have had a reference to death because it's where they execute people. But there are, if you go to the Holy Land today, they'll show you two places that they believe it was one of. I'm not sure which one, but they believe it was one of. Doesn't really matter where Jesus died.
Who is the they that believes this? The Jews or the
historians and Bible scholars? When I say they, I'm talking about different, the accepted in Bible colleges, the accepted teaching out of Bible colleges. And so, but if you go to Jerusalem, the Jews will show you two different places, but that doesn't mean they believe it at all. They're just making money.
Oh.
You know, you're a tourist. I can charge you 50 cents and make you walk over here and look at this hill. That's 50 cents. I think it's probably a little more than that, though. But maybe they are believers. I don't know. I'm not saying anything about the people who do that, but it's just they don't know exactly where it is. Is that rain?
Probably.
Well. All right, so the drink they offered him, the wine mingled with myrrh, was somewhat of a numbing agent. It would have helped to deaden the pain. Jesus refused it. He said no. He had no outside help in pain management. He suffered it completely. And because he is, like I say, he was paying a penalty. So, but he could have taken an easier way out there, at least. He could have been numbed up a little bit. But he didn't do that. He was definitely on a mission to save us. So, 24.
And when they had crucified him, they parted his garments, casting lots upon them, whatever name should take.
All right, so this was a fulfillment of what David wrote in Psalm 22, verse 18. Somebody wants to read Psalm 22, 18. Actually, you should get a chance to read all of Psalm 22. I know we just studied it, but when you read that in light of the crucifixion is where it makes the most sense.
But you just want that one verse right
Yes,
now?
Just the one.
They part my garments among them and cast lots upon my vesture.
All right, we're going to go back to that here shortly for one other verse, if you want to hold it. It'll be a little bit, but I just said, you know. All right, so Jesus had, and I didn't write down where this is from, but his garment was one continuous piece. There was no seams. So somebody along the line had given him a very expensive garment. That's why when it was, they didn't want to cut it. Normally, they would have just divided it up and people would have done something with it. But this one had to go intact, so they had to cast lots to keep it intact. And that's what they were doing. But could you imagine being on your deathbed and having people arguing over your stuff before you even passed? Imagine hanging on a cross and watching them argue over the only possession you have was the clothes on his back. That's all Jesus owned. He didn't own anything. And they're arguing over it right there in front of him. That'd be pretty sad to see when you think about it. I mean, he's going through an awful lot this night, and it's not getting much better. All right, just 25.
It was the third hour, and they crucified him.
All right, so Jewish time starts the day at 6 a.m. So the first hour would be 6. Third hour is obviously 9. You got to remember, Jesus had had no sleep. He'd not been asleep, so he's been up all night. He was in all the agony in the garden where he sweated blood, and now he's been whipped and slapped and, you know, beaten on and everything else, and now he's hanging on a cross. You gotta imagine that he's getting long already, probably. You know what I mean? He would be wore out by this point. Any of us would be. 26 through 28.
And the superscription of his accusation was written over the King of the Jews. And with him, they crucified two thieves, the one on his right hand and the other on his left. And the scripture was fulfilled, which saith, and he was numbered with the transgressors.
All right, so Pilate placed that sign over Jesus on the cross, much to the aggravation of Jewish leaders. But it was typical for a condemned man to wear a placard as he was being marched to crucifixion of what his crime was. So Pilate had them write King of the Jews because he didn't like what the Jews were doing. Then he put it up there on the cross, which they never did. It never went on the cross. It was never nailed to the cross. It was never anything. They came to him and said, can you please take the sign down? And he said, no. No. Yes.
Wouldn't the earlier, the purple robes did the same thing?
It was. It was
a danger of the Pharisees.
It was. I'm not sure if the Pharisees would have seen that or not. I bet it was a mocking thing. They were just probably just making fun of Jesus. Like,
okay. I thought it might have been aimed toward the Jews.
If they were able to see it, it would have been. But we don't know exactly where that took place at. We don't know how they. If it had been in front of the Pharisees, they would have thought it was funny too. I will say that. What they didn't like is suddenly this sign being posted by Rome. You know, that's a whole different story. It's one thing to make fun of, but now you have a sign above his head that says he is King of the Jews. And that's exactly what they're arguing about, that he's not King of the Jews. So I think it's, in a way, you got to give Pilate some credit. He was smart enough to know what he was up against, and he was also wily enough to aggravate him, but he should have said no. He just should have said no. Pilate had a problem where he had already messed up twice with the Jews, and a third time would have removed him from his position. Rome did not want trouble of any kind. They wanted people to stay calm at all times. Pilate's job was peacekeeper. Twice he had been a troublemaker, and he was afraid that if he did not fulfill what they wanted, they would have complained to Rome and had him removed because he was already on probation kind of. Anybody remember what he did that messed him up or put him on his path? Well, I don't remember which one was first. I think the first thing he did, I believe, I can have him out of order, so don't quote me on this, but he had the Roman banner put inside the temple. And that really upset a bunch of Jews. And they complained, and Rome told him to get him out. It was silly not to bother. And then after that, he took the temple treasury and did some public works with it. I think he built some either aqueducts or some type of sewer type. So I can't remember which one he did. But he did something with the treasury out of the temple. And that really upset the Jews and caused a bunch of problems. And they complained to Rome, and Rome pretty much told him, you mess up one more time. Stop aggravating the people. Just keep the peace, whatever is needed to keep the peace. So he didn't walk away from this. His wife, if y'all remember, his wife said, you need to wash your hands of the whole mess and leave this man alone. And he actually does wash his hands and says, I've washed my hands of it. Let his blood be on you all. But that's still on his. Still on his. He had the opportunity to walk away from it if he had wanted. He could have said, no, I'm picking who got released. You all get Barabbas. Or you all get Jesus, and I'll see you all later. And we're all going to crucify Barabbas. The interesting thing, I don't know what people, Mike, but some people, some of the preachers and teachers on this believe that the two thieves on the cross were in Barabbas' gang. He was their leader. And that's why Jesus ended up on the center cross, because that's where they would have hung him, in the center with his cohorts on both sides of him. And there's, that very well could be. Could you imagine, though, being Barabbas, and you know you're being crucified today, and you hear the guards come down, and they open the door and said, you're free to go. That'd have been a shock, wouldn't it? You're expected to be led to your death, and instead you're just turned loose. But it's because they had somebody else to kill in his place, so they let him go. Let's go on here. Oh, verse 28, by the way, is a fulfillment of Isaiah 53:12.
Did you want that read?
Yes. Yes.
53:12.
Right.
Therefore will I divide him a portion with the great, and he shall divide the spoil with the strong, because he hath poured out his soul unto death. And he was numbered with the transgressors, and he bare the sin of many, and made intercession for the transgressors.
So, you know, it's kind of interesting when you put that in the frame of Barabbas. He actually died in Barabbas' place, but he did die in all of our place at the same time. But, I mean, literally, he died in the place of the murdering thief. And he just, but it was all part of the greater thing he was doing. So, anyway, all right.
I saw something that tied that deeper to that Barabbas' name in Arabic means son of the father.
It does.
So,
it does. That's actually, you know what? I never looked it up to see what his name meant, except when I looked at it today when I was citing it today. I thought, Abba means father, and Bar means son of. And I already knew that because Bar Jonah, there was Bar is thrown in a couple things. It does mean son of. So I thought, well, there you go, that's son of the father. That's a pretty interesting idea. Abba is a term of respect normally, though. Not daddy, it's father. So, but this could point. I mean, the symbolism that was built into the whole thing. Does anybody see anything funny that Simon Peter denied Jesus and Simon the Cyrene is the guy who carried his cross? Is that just a coincidence they both had to be named Simon? Probably not. Probably not. Something in there also. I don't know. 30 to 32. 29 to 32.
And they that passed by railed on him, wagging their heads, and saying, Ah, thou that destroyest the temple and buildest it in 3 days, save thyself and come down from the cross. Likewise also the chief priests mocking said among themselves with the scribes, He saved others, himself he cannot save. Let Christ the King of Israel descend now from the cross, that we may see and believe. And they that were crucified with him reviled him.
All right, so when you're looking at this, they are using the evidence from the false witness right here. Jesus did say, tear this temple down, and I'll rebuild it in 3 days. But not the way that this is presented here. They're still not figuring out. They still have yet to figure out what he said exactly. They are using it against him. And like most of the Jews, they wanted a definite sign that he was the Son of God. actually, if you had been a priest and you put Jesus in this position and you said, if you're really the Son of God, come on down off there, what would you have done if he'd come down off there? What would you have thought? I don't think that would have said, oh, you are the Son of God. Let's go get a drink of water, sit down and talk with him. That would have scared him to death, in all honesty, because of what they just put him through. But they're just mocking. They honestly have no reason to believe he's the Son of God in their mind. They think that he has just made them look bad, and they're getting their revenge. But it says, and they that were crucified with him reviled him. Even the thief at this point was not the repentant thief, even him. Nobody was on Jesus' side at this point. It's after this that the one thief starts bad-mouthing Jesus, and the other thief steps up, but it's not in here. What I find the most interesting of this whole thing is this is the crowd in Jerusalem calling for Jesus' crucifixion, and they are mocking him. And they're there watching it. They're making fun of him. If the priest hadn't been there, the crowd probably never would have shown up because crucifixions just happened. And nobody wants to watch crucifixion, really. I mean, you might be curious about one, but you'd never want to stand and watch somebody suffer like that, you know. So they weren't really well-attended events after the trial was over. That's why they took them outside of the city, away from everybody, and they did this. But the priest and the Jewish religious leaders went along, and that piqued everybody's attention. So everybody was stopping by to see what was happening. And they too, were making fun of it. There has to be people in this crowd who cheered for Jesus on his triumphal entry a week earlier. I don't believe it's possible that you could have made two crowds during Passover that didn't have crossover between the two. So they went from worshiping Jesus, laying their garments in the road, laying palm leaves in the road, doing everything they can to honor Jesus, to calling for his crucifixion in 1 week. That reminds me of something. Mega churches. That great hyped up feeling when Sunday morning service is going on, the rock band's playing, and you got all your flashing lights and it's deafening music and everybody's swaying and hooting and hollering. Then that feeling goes away. And that's when most mega church attendees think Jesus doesn't love them anymore because they don't feel Jesus as close as they did in church. I'm wondering if that's not what happened here. These people were all wrapped up in the crowd, all joyous and happy and singing and shouting, and then they weren't around Jesus and feeling was gone. They decided not to honor him as Jesus anymore. It's an awful lot about what false religion looks like. People get all wrapped up in it in a moment, but it's not a lasting change of any kind. Pretty sad that it went to that extreme that quickly, though. Pretty weird. All right. 33.
And when the sixth hour was coming, there was darkness over the whole land until the ninth hour.
Okay, sixth hour is noon, and the ninth hour is 3. That's simple math now. But it was dark that whole time. There is not an eclipse. And the way they know that there was no eclipse there, I mean, you can go back and with computer models now, you can go back and see exactly what was going on everywhere. But Passover happens at a full moon, and eclipses never happen with a full moon is what they say. So there's no way there was a solar eclipse. It's not like a solar eclipse came through. God does use natural events like that to prove a point, but this is darkness. They also suggest that there was possibly a lunar eclipse that night. And there could have been because if you remember, there's darkness and the sun is not shining and the moon does not give off its light is a prophecy about the end times. And this could have been a little precursor to that. I don't know for sure if there was a solar eclipse or not there, but that's something they suggest might have been going on. But it's dark, unnaturally dark. 34 and 35. held out.
And at the ninth hour, Jesus cried with a loud voice, saying, "Eloi, Eloi, lama sabachthani," which is being interpreted, my God, why hast thou forsaken me?" And some of them that stood by, when they heard it, said, "Behold, he calleth his Elias."
All right. Now I know why nobody wanted to read it. You did good. All right. Verse 34 is a reference to Psalm 22:1, Mike.
22:1. My God, why hast thou forsaken me? Why art thou so far from helping me and from the words of my roaring?
So he's talking about that. We've mentioned before about the forsaking. I don't think God actually forsook him. He just didn't help him. You know, he left Jesus to pay the penalty because that was the plan. I don't think I've heard it even preached by other pastors that God turned his back on Jesus at this time. I don't think that's what God does. I don't see any reference that would make that seem logical at all in the Bible. Being silent, yes. He could have been being silent right now. But this is just Jesus in his human agony calling out. Here's the funny thing. Who did they say he called out to? Which is Elijah. We would know him as Elijah. But he didn't say Elijah. He clearly said God. That word is God. That word is not Elijah. So the people who heard him lied. They told the crowd that he called out for Elijah. Now, why would he have done that? Why would they care who he called out to? Well, you can't pray to dead people. The Bible's clear about that. If they had Jesus, the Old Testament's clear about not messing with dead people. If Jesus was praying to a dead person, that would have made him even more of a heretic, more of a blaspheming person. So they lied and said he was praying, he was calling for Elijah to come help him. That's pretty low down. Think about it. That's pretty low down. Anyway, just another effort to make him look bad. 36 and 37.
Didn't they believe that Elijah was taken into heaven? Did he not?
But you don't pray to him. You can't pray to him. He's not here. Jesus, well, so Elijah would be alive, Enoch would be alive right now.
Right.
But you can't pray to them.
Right.
Because they're not omnipotent. So you wouldn't pray to past people at all. And the Jews never prayed to Elias or Elijah. They expected him to come back one day, but they never prayed to him. So this was just an attempt. But that's the point. Yeah, they weren't really dead. They're alive somewhere right now, talking to Rose, probably. Rose probably had a question or two. Said, "Let me tell you what Pat said." I gotta get this straight. I think he's wrong.
It wouldn't make any sense to pray to someone other than God, anyways. The Bible says, "God hears your prayers." It doesn't say anything about somebody else hearing prayers.
Well, it does say. I mean, it's still God. Jesus is the only mediator between God and man. Point blank. So I don't know, but this was just a way to make him look bad. That's just all. I mean, that just shows what they. This crowd has really been out of shape, aren't they? Jesus right now, for some reason. All right, 36 and 37.
"And one ran and filled a sponge full of vinegar and put it on a reed and gave him to drink, saying, 'Let alone, let us see whether Elias will come to take him down.' And Jesus cried with a loud voice and gave up the ghost."
All right, so if you're keeping track of time, at noon, Jesus stopped talking. All the conversations that he had about John, take care of my mother, and with the thief and all that had happened before the lights went out. So he has not talked for 3 hours. When he does talk, he can barely talk. You all imagine he's dehydrated. He's been hanging up there. He doesn't have a whole lot of energy. A guy gives him a drink of water or a drink of vinegar, something that I can say, what's his whistle, I guess. And then Jesus cries with a loud voice. And everybody got to hear that. When he finally spoke was everybody. It was his final cry of agony. 38.
"And the veil of the temple was rent in twain from the top to the bottom."
All right. So the veil, that is what separated people from the Holy of Holies. That is where the presence of God sat upon the mercy seat, which is the top of the Ark of the Covenant, Noah's Ark. So, with Jesus' death, though, sin is washed away, and we do not need that separation anymore from God. God, you wouldn't want to stand before God without your sin being washed away, because that would be the end of you. God would destroy you if you tried to stand in his presence with sin. That's one reason they say that God turned his back on Jesus, because he could not look upon sin. My answer to people who say that is, if God can't look upon sin, then he's not looking toward the earth at all. He has his back turned. Now, right now, it does kind of seem like he has his back turned on America, the way we've been moving, but God can look upon sin. He just can't be in his presence. Now that Jesus' blood has been shed, there is forgiveness of those sins, complete forgiveness. Animal blood only covered sin, but sin was still there. It was a sign of what was to come. Jesus' blood actually washes it all away for us. So now we have the Holy Spirit, and for lack of a better way to describe it, he's the one who bridges the gap for us. But that's not to be heresy or sacrilegious or anything, but I mean, there's really not a good way to describe his interaction for us on our behalf, for God, in front of God. But the point is, though, things changed drastically with the death of Jesus. So, 39.
When the centurion which stood over him saw that he so cried out and gave up the ghost, he said, "Truly, this man was the Son of God."
This is a pretty powerful witness from a centurion. He could have gotten in trouble, possibly lost his position for becoming a believer in a Jewish God. But Rome was pretty lenient. They let you worship whatever gods you wanted, but they didn't expect their soldiers to worship other gods outside of the ones they officially recognized as Roman gods. But it's interesting, the person who's converted at the cross is still a Gentile. The Jews are not converted. We don't have a record of a priest saying, "Oh, we might have made a mistake. He probably is the Son of God." They don't have that at all. They just have them making fun of him. Here you have a Gentile recognizing Jesus for who he truly is. All right, let's go with 40 and 41.
There were also women looking on from afar, among whom were Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James, and Blessed, and of Joseph, and Salome, who also followed him and ministered to him when he was first in Galilee, and many other women who came up with him to Jerusalem.
All right, so Jesus had the 12 disciples, but he also had a large entourage that followed him. And there were women who took care of things. They took care of cooking and daily stuff like that, also in support. They were a support team. These ladies obviously have a little more. Mary Magdalene had a demon cast out of her at one point. But she's following, and some of these others now, I'll talk about who they were here in a minute probably. Let me see. The big point here, though, is where were the disciples? Still sleeping in the garden. Huh? Still sleeping. Yeah. We only know for a fact that one of them was ever at the cross because Jesus talked to him. That was John. That means the other 10, because Judas was already out, the other 10 were nowhere around. The men who followed him the most and were part of his circle aren't there, but faithful women are there. That shows something interesting about that, because who was the first people in the garden on Resurrection Day? Yeah. Women. Mm-hmm. Women were there first. Women were here last. Women were there first. That's pretty amazing. So, thanks for being faithful to the Lord. All right, 42 through 45.
And now when the even was come, because it was the preparation, that is, the day before the Sabbath, Joseph of Arimathea, an honorable counselor, which also waited for the kingdom of God, came and went in boldly unto Pilate and craved the body of Jesus. And Pilate marveled if he were already dead, and calling unto him the centurion, he asked him whether he had been any while dead. And when he knew it of the centurion, he gave the body to Joseph.
All right, so Pilate confirms that Jesus died. Jesus, if you remember, they were having... Jesus said, nobody kills me. I lay my life down, I pick it back up because the Father gave me the ability to do that. That's what he says. Pilate seems a little amazed that Jesus had died already. But that's because Jesus ran a different timetable than man. He had a different timetable. He wouldn't have allowed Joseph to pick up the body unless he had official confirmation Jesus was dead. And that's why it's important the centurion confirmed that Jesus is dead. If that didn't happen, they would have said Joseph Arimathea just got Jesus off the cross before he died and nursed him back to health, and that's why he shows up later. That's what they would have claimed. Here you have a Roman centurion, and his word is gold. You going to say something, Tom? I'll let you were going to say something. I didn't want to cut you off if you were. There is another person involved with Joseph in the burial. Anybody know who it is?
Nicodemus.
And again, they teach that Nicodemus was probably still at the cross watching the body. Because you couldn't touch it until you had approval to touch the body. And the Romans would have just disposed of Jesus' body. There would not have been a burial for him. You know, people didn't take the criminal back home usually. Very rarely did people want the body back. Because these were scourges of society, and they were in Jerusalem, and they could have been from anywhere, and it's just always a big mess. But they believe that Nicodemus stood there until Joseph came back with permission to take the body down. Can you imagine what that would have been like? Think how hard it would be for you right now today to have to take the body of Jesus off a cross. Now think how much harder it would be if it was your friend. If he was your friend. You know, we know him as our Savior, but these guys knew him as a friend. They visited with him. They talked to him. They asked him questions. They had more of a personal relationship with him physically than any of us ever have. I imagine that would have been really hard. I mean, think of how bad we miss Rose. And Rose wasn't beaten. And she wasn't hung on a cross. And we didn't have to go get her bloody body down off the cross and... That's a big difference on this, and these guys were willing to do that.
I think maybe the disciples got a little bit of a bad rap because, yeah, John was the only one that stayed there, but they've seen crucifixions before, and if they love Jesus so much, how could they stand there and watch him be crucified and tortured like that?
I'm really not trying to put them down. They actually could have been in the crowd. It's just they had no interaction that was ever recorded.
I mean, it's sad that that you don't hear that they did because, you know, you want your closest loved ones with you when you're dying
right.
At the same time.
I agree. I mean,
I never really watched the movie. I let alone be there in person.
Wouldn't have been done.
I skipped that part of the movie. I wouldn't have, or I don't even know.
I really do wonder if Peter was there somewhere. Because he's already feeling pretty guilty for deserting him. I have a feeling he was probably in the crowd somewhere. But you know, the point about their desertion was Jesus told him to scatter, though. He actually did say that. He said, when they take the shepherd, the sheep will scatter, which is pretty much saying, you all need to stay clear of this whole mess. Don't get in the middle of it. Don't mess with it. This is God's will, and this has to happen, and it's not going to be pretty. But I don't know.
Question. Actually, two questions.
Yeah.
Okay. The study Bible says that Joseph was a member of the Sanhedrin, which is the council, right? So he was like going against everybody else.
He was. So was Nicodemus.
Oh, he was too. Okay.
Yeah. They were both going against. they probably had both at different times spoken in favor of Jesus to these guys. When they had their discussions about what they should do, they were probably more of the lenient, the voice of reason in the group, but they were still part of that group. But, you know, they were believers. That was the difference.
So it also states here that the reason that Pilate was surprised is it took men 2 to 3 days to die. And Jesus did it in hours. And is there any recording or anything written about what happened to the other two? Did they take 2 or 3 days to die?
They might have. They very well could have, because crucifixion is suffocation.
Right.
That's why they wanted to break Jesus' legs.
I was going to say they broke their legs and they punctured him and all that stuff. They accelerated the process.
That was to end it, yeah. But they didn't break Jesus' legs. Jesus. But once you break the legs, you accelerate the suffocation. You're not able to raise up. You got to push off to get a breath, because your diaphragm and everything is compressed by the way you're hanging, all your body weight's hanging. So people eventually wear out. They get to the point they just run out of strength. You also have to remember those people were not nailed, they were tied. So the strain on the body wasn't as bad. I mean, it's still bad, but it's not like having to push against a nail driven through both of your feet. You know, that would be painful every time you try.
Nailed and they were tied.
What's that?
Hatred.
Well, hatred, yeah. Yeah, I don't know how they determined that he should have been nailed. But typical people were not nailed to a cross. Now, when you look up the history of how crucifixions come up, some people say that they were tied also because the flesh isn't strong enough to hold a body. So they did nail you and they tied you. But most people were just tied, because it wasn't about inflicting the pain of driving a nail in your body. That's painful. Wasn't about that. It was about suffocating you. A slow, agonizing death that took days. I didn't realize it was that many days, but I knew it took a long time for somebody to actually wear out at this. So, they were getting ready to break Jesus' legs, so he would suffocate. He wouldn't be able to lift up. Is what they were getting ready to do when he gave it up. So, I am curious, though, why the disciples didn't approach to get the body. I am curious about that. I mean, I'm not putting them down for it. I'm just curious, though. If
fear of the Jews, the priests?
Maybe. I don't know.
They were humans, though. They were obviously amazing humans.
Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah, but they were humans. I mean, with the same fears we have and everything.
Right. And the same feel-like emotions.
Right. Now,
well, they all hid away after the crucifixion. So, I mean, I think it was a fear had to do with a good part of it, I would say.
Right. If he had been left on the cross, maybe they would have, you know. But these two guys had a plan already in place. This wasn't, oh, look, they crucified Jesus. Well, let me go get a tomb and let me go get some linen and some spices. It was already prepared. They had prepared in advance for this. The disciples had not prepared in advance for it, obviously. Yes.
And also later when the women go down to the tomb and report to the disciples immediately knew where the tomb was and all that stuff. So they might have been in contact with Joseph of Arimathea and the women and everybody else, and been monitoring exactly what's
right.
going on. You don't know.
You're right. And it does come up here in a minute that the women knew because they watched it. So maybe they were in that crowd also. Maybe they were there for the brief funeral service while they prepared the body. All right, so let me see. Yeah, so these guys, like I said, it was too late to go to the market to buy the stuff they needed. They already had it. It is mentioned that the linen was bought. That's what it actually says. Where does it say that? Let me
46,
see.
You haven't read 46 yet.
I didn't read 46?
You didn't have anybody to read it yet.
Oh, well, go ahead and finish this up. Somebody, 46 or 47.
And he bought fine linen and took him down and wrapped him in the linen and laid him in the sepulchre, which was hewn out of a rock, and rolled a stone unto the door of the sepulchre. And Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of Joseph beheld where he was laid.
Okay, so see, the women were there. They actually saw where the tomb was. Some of the disciples could have been there also, or maybe they came back and told them. I don't know, but you're right. Somehow they knew exactly where to run to. It is specifically mentioned, though, that they bought fine linen. It was okay to use used linen to wrap a body. It did not have to be new linen. It could have, didn't matter. It was a body, you just wrapped it in linen. The fact that they had bought new shows that they honored Jesus. You know, they, it was going to be the best they could possibly do. That's how we know these guys had been prepped in advance for this. They were ready for the day this. Now, they could have been ready just a few days. We don't know how far in advance they prepared this. The grave maybe was Joseph of Arimathea's personal one, or it could have been just one he bought just for this occasion. He was the owner of it, though. We don't know. The Bible doesn't clearly say that it was strictly his and he gave up his burial site. It just says he owned this one. So he could have went out and bought it right before the crucifixion. Mary Magdalene, her name means she is from Magdala, which was a seaside village on the west side of the Sea of Galilee. That's what her last name means, if it's even her last name. It could have been, you know, a description, because we didn't use a lot of surnames back then. The other Mary was the mother of James the Less. James the Less was a disciple. He's always listed ninth in the list. Anytime you see a list of disciples, he's always number nine. Always. So the disciples are broken down into four groups of three. The first one listed is always the leader of that group. So he would have been the leader of the outermost ring. They all had different functions. I can't remember what they all were. But this outer ring, part of what they did was they determined who got to see Jesus. You just couldn't walk up to Jesus randomly. You know, they were crowd control. They wouldn't prohibit people from seeing Jesus, but you had to talk to him before you got through. He was in charge of that part. He did have a brother named Joseph, or Joseph, as we would know it in English. The Bible mentions him, but it does not go into any detail about who he was. And it's interesting here, they don't mention James the Less this time. They did the first time, not the second time. They changed it up a little bit. The only thing is, he was probably a leader in the early church, and people would have recognized the name better than we do. Any questions?
I have an odd question.
Okay.
So, they just got this new Bible, which is unusually large. And being a word nerd that I am, I haven't really compared this. But in verse 36, it's fun to spell wrong because I've never noticed it before. Or is it, that's how it's spelled in King James.
Let me go see how it's spelled in here. 36. It is, that's the old English spell. Okay. I didn't catch it either. I just saw it and went on. So, but yeah, that would be the old English spellings. We had this conversation in school the other day. One of them made fun of a King James verse that said digged. And I said, I'll be honest with you, digged is correct. Dug is a slang term. We say we dug a hole, we dug a well. No, we digged a well is what we did, the past tense of dig. We have adapted it down to dug. Because we're lazy people, I guess. I don't know why we do that, but it happened that way. So the old English, though, we changed it up. I'm really glad we quit making the F's and the S's look the same or whatever, and the V and the U and so much of that stuff had the exact same letter to it all the time. It's really hard when you read the 1611 version of a King James. You ever see one? Because all the S's are F's.
When I first got saved, I guess I was reading my Bible too much because I said to my husband, something about one tomorrow.
There you go. Yeah, you picked up the old English already. Yeah, so. Who else? Anybody?